monk. I'm an alcoholic, an addict, a workaholic, spendaholic, shopaholic, all the holics. I think I went through most of them. So I'm in recovery from all the holics, and I guess I'm in discovery of the Buddhism, Buddhist path. I didn't come to this path, and I was about 4 years sober when I came, when I found my Buddhist practice. And that was 20 years ago. So I'm coming up on 24 or 25 years of clean and sober behavior. Not always skillful, though. Not always skillful behavior, but I try to be sober. So, for those of you who actually, as I said, I'm a Zen Buddhist, and forgive me if I use terms that do not quite gel with your own understanding of your own practice. I only speak from my own experience, my own practice, and my own understanding of Buddhism. So if it differs slightly from yours, forgive me, and get over it. So the great Zen monk Dogen Zenji, he lived around 750 years ago, in the 1200s, maybe longer then. And one of the most famous three lines that he spoke or wrote were, "To study the way is to study the self." So to study Buddhism, if you like, or the Tao, is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. And to forget the self is to be awakened by the myriad things. To forget the self is to be awakened by the myriad things. So I think the work we do in recovery and the work we do in our practice of Buddhism can coalesce beautifully. Both require us to engage in a deep, honest examination of the self. That's not so easy to do in the early days of recovery. By the time we get to the recovery door, we're all so armored, so defended. It takes a while to penetrate the fortress. I know from my own experience I wasn't ready to look at my deep, darkest secrets for at least 3 or 4 years into sobriety. And even then I only kind of scratched the surface, the tip of the iceberg. As I said, I began my Buddhist practice about 4 years into my sobriety. And I'm still working on my stuff, my feelings of inadequacy, my guilt, my shame. But it's different. It's more manageable now. It doesn't have quite the grip on me that it used to have. When I was in my addiction, it was all about me and my wants and my needs and my life. Thank you very much. Right? All about me, 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 me. You and me, the universe. There wasn't much room for anyone else. And I was just, I had a lot of, like most of us in, I would venture to say I had a lot of really great acquaintances, drinking buddies, drug buddies, whatever bud is, our addiction bud is, but when we got sober, there weren't really any really good friends. But that was fine for me. I mean, I didn't really want anybody to be close to me. Why would I want that? If I felt that I was worthy of having close relationships, I wouldn't have been getting high. You know, I wouldn't have been drunk most of my life. So when I got sober, it made it very difficult for me to allow you, my sober brothers and sisters, it was very difficult to allow you into my world because I had spent a life of just, you know, me. I was never an isolator. It wasn't that I was ever like locked up in my room or not going out. But even in a crowd, it was, you know, as long as I can get the next drink, the next drug, the next whatever, we're all doing our own thing, even though we're all in the same place together. When the time came for me to work steps 4 and 5, I had no problem coming up with the people who had harmed me and my resentment, because the truth was that if you hadn't done this to me, I wouldn't be where I am today. It's all your fault. So I was very quick to draw upon my reserves of resentment and throw them out there. I did a pretty good job of fooling my sponsor. And actually, I was with my sponsor today. He's now 76. He has end-stage COPD. He's in assisted living, and he's, you know, has oxygen full-time. And I take care of him. I took him to the doctors today. It was like a 2-hour exhausting trip to the doctors and back. And there's this wonderful bond between us. It's like mother-daughter or something. It's such a beautiful, tactile, loving relationship that I never ever had with anyone else, certainly not with my mother. And it dawned on me as I was with him in the doctor's office and thinking about coming here this evening, about my karma, about this meeting this wonderful man who actually kept me sober, well, I kept myself sober with his help for all these years. And it was a beautiful, beautiful moment to just be with him. He's very frail, but be with him holding his hand and thinking about our journey together. We've both had an incredible journey over the last 24 years. So by the time I got to work in steps at 8 and 9, I wasn't really invested in promptly admitting my wrongs, because I never asked you into my world. I never asked you to be my friend. In fact, I never asked you for shit. I may have asked a complete stranger for drugs, but I never asked you for anything. My friends. So, if you were hurt by anything I did or said to you, it's your fault, not mine. because you're there because you want to be. And then it was around step 10 that I began to see that I had a part in the creation of my hell realm of a life. And it was because something was beginning to creep in. Now, we're talking about $100,000 worth of therapy later. But the word that my therapist was using from, let's see, I was with her a year before I got sober, so for 10 years, I don't know, many years, the word I was beginning to allow into my consciousness was intimacy, vulnerability. And how could I take personal moral inventory and admit my wrongs if I can't be intimate with myself and if I can't be vulnerable with myself and with you to say, you know what, I was wrong. And to do that thing where you take the action and let go of the results, to just be okay with, you know what, I was wrong, and I'm sorry. Will you forgive me? Right? Because without that, there's no forgiveness for me, for myself. You know, for me, I have to, forgiveness has to come from within me, for me. But I can't get that unless I get it from you. Now, luckily in the Zen tradition, we have this daily chant in the morning, and it goes like this. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old, on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, mouth, and thought, now I atone for it all. So all evil karma ever committed by me. Now, if we are one with our Buddhist practice, we know that there's no past, no present, no future. There's just this moment, right? So all the evil karma ever committed by me is all my ancestors, all the karmic causations that brought me to this room, in this very moment, all the karmic causations that brought you guys into this room to meet each other and to meet me in this moment. Think of the thousands of years, all those things that had to happen in order for us to be here this evening. So when I'm atoning for my karmic misdeeds in this moment, I'm atoning for all my misdeeds and all my ancestors. And it made it a little easier for me to share the burden with others. See, it's not all on my shoulder now. I can look at myself, this drunk, this addict, with a little bit of separation. I can say, oh, you know what? Wasn't all my fault, my being the little I, the little self. Haven't quite got to the big self yet. So it's not to say that, well, for sure, my mother's toxic womb and her lifestyle definitely, you know, formed my upbringing and the lifestyle that I went into. But she had a mother, and she had a mother, and she had a mother, and she had a mother. So all the alcoholic chodos before this one are all atoning. Father Chodo, not that I ever met him, but my father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, my great-great-great-grandmother, all the alcoholic chodos, when I'm atoning for my bad karma in this moment, every morning I'm atoning for all of them. And somehow it makes it a lot easier for me to say, you know what, we're all in this together. And suddenly, I'm not alone. And shit, suddenly I'm not alone. And I realize that, hey, it's not just me in the world. There's a whole mess of people out there. To study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. So when we study, when we practice the Dharma, we're practicing our life. We are the Dharma. There's no separation. And when we study the self, it's about forgetting the small self, the I. We're all connected. And when we forget the self, when we forget that it's just about me, suddenly the whole world, the myriad things, the 10,000 things are available to us. All the wonders of the world are available to us because we're now open to a bigger opportunity than just this little me. I'm not afraid to tell you what I want. I'm not afraid to ask you for forgiveness. I may not be comfortable, but I'm aware that for my karmic path, I'm still cleaning up all my own karma and my ancestors. And at each moment, we're creating our karma. In Zen, we say that in each moment, in Zen, we don't talk about the afterlife or rebirth. We talk about this is our life, our death. In each moment, born, die, born, die, born, die. So in each moment, we're cleaning up, we're creating karma and cleaning it up. So in each moment, cause and effect, my wrong speech, my wrong action will create a negative effect somewhere. So if I can be aware in each moment that I need to clean up my act, it makes it a lot easier. No, it doesn't. I just lied. It's actually really tough to be right speech, right action, right behavior, right thought. It's not that easy. But I am aware of it. Through my years of meditation practice and working on myself and the steps, I've become awake to all my faults, to all my ego, to all my ideas about me. And I'm not perfect. I have a lot of garbage, a lot of baggage that I still carry around. But I know it. I don't hide from it anymore. That's why I drank and drugged, because I was hiding from those demons. Now I'm able to look at them and go, all right, bring it on. What's next? So, I think that's enough from me. I'd like to hear what you have to say. Thank you. Yes.